welcome. Good to see you on board.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
We're on board Unbridled, and we're actually being towed to the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show this afternoon.
Absolutely. You know, it's exciting stuff.
It is. It is. This is unique. Not a lot of people get the opportunity to actually see how this show comes together. And, you know, we're on a 59-meter Trinity-built yacht built back in 2006-07. Back when I was running Nautical Structures, this is one of the boats that I helped supply and was involved with Trinity in the design and integration of a bunch of equipment. So it's really serendipity to be on this boat, and I'm going to be on this boat all week, and to have you, who we've been friends for a long time.
We have indeed, yeah. I was trying to figure out actually how long, 10, 12 years, I think.
Every bit of that. Because I remember, you know, back in the day working with Flagging Class, and between you and Pete Southgate, a lot of conversations. Actually, you, Pete, and I were on the ISS technical committee for a while.
That's right.
And I also think we have a thing about, you know, having our socks kind of, you know, looking stylish.
Sharp.
You know, we gotta keep that rocking. So, you know, it's an inside thing there. But welcome. I'm thrilled to sit down and have this conversation with you.
Likewise.
Yeah. So we're at sea. We're rocking and rolling. I love it. We'll only see that if you see it over our shoulders through the window. But so we talk about the business of yachting, and that we're both in the business of yachting for sure. This is what it's all about. And what I think a lot of people miss or don't really understand is the role that Flag State has in the whole process, all the way from the purchasing decisions and the construction decisions to how the boat's used. And I think this is a great opportunity to kind of let people better understand the role of Flag in all of this. And you are you're actually the director of yachting.
Yeah, I'm the commercial director
with Marshall Island Shipping Registry.
Correct.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But that's not been my first foray into Flag.
No, sir.
Yeah, well, shall I give you a bit of a history about
that segues into stuff.
So, I've always been into the maritime industry through my love of sailing. So my family got me into messing around on boats and much smaller boats, of course.
But how old were you then?
I would go and do like my kind of annual week learning how to sail, and you do, you know, your RYA levels every year.
With prams or?
Yeah. So I was, really small boat sailing from the age of like kind of 7 or 8 and kind of sailing with my dad in mirror dinghies. And then as I got older, I got more interested in slightly larger, I mean, obviously not where we are here, but in the kind of like 30, 35, 40 foot kind of size.
Right.
I was always interested in design, so I studied naval architecture at university, but that wasn't before I actually went to Australia and got my yacht master's. So I never actually...
I didn't know that about you. You went down under to do that.
Yeah, I did, and so technically I do have a ticket somewhere in a drawer.
The chart's not hanging on a wall.
Yeah,
huh?
Never used in a commercial sense, and certainly not on boats of this size.
Right.
So then I studied naval architecture in Southampton. And my first job out of there was working for a UK-based naval architecture company, and I was straight into designing boats of this size that were being built in the UK and abroad, and then all the way up to 140, 150 metres.
That's big.
Yeah, we were lucky that they had that kind of real cross-section, so I wasn't messing around with the small stuff. I was straight into that kind of real bigger end of the industry. And what I found that was really interesting was the way which my small boat experience and understanding really informed that. You know, everything from messing around on small boats really, you know, I'm not saying I knew how to drive a big boat, but understanding the water and being on small boats really did help me trying to transition that knowledge into bigger boats.
Right.
So certainly wasn't lost, in that transition. And then... through the design and kind of working with shipyards there, we, through the nature of some of the projects that we were involved in, ended up getting involved in a lot of the regulatory side. So we were submitting drawings to Class and Flag, and we were often cleaning up shipyard problems. We were kind of the fixers of a lot of problems.
There you go.
And that side of the industry started to kind of come to life for me. So when I left Naval Architecture, I went to the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency.
The MCA.
That's correct.
Okay. So, here's that. The acronym thrown around, but
so
that's
right.
Where it comes from.
So the MCA, which is the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency, which is the UK Flag Administration.
That's right.
And I ended up working for them in their marine technology branch. So I was quite regulatory kind of focused and not specifically yachts. So
is that an umbrella for Red Ensign? How does that, you know what, that's a confusion for a lot of people.
There is a confusion there. I think there's even internal confusion, or at least there was when I joined.
Okay.
In that the MCA or the UK is the senior kind of body.
Right.
And they develop regulations that are often pushed out to their crown dependencies and overseas territories that include places that within the yachting sphere you would have heard of, like the Cayman Islands and the Isle of Man and Gibraltar and BVIs. And Bermuda.
Right.
So as this kind of the senior kind of party within that.
But not US, because we revolted not, many years ago and we're no longer persona non grata, right?
Yes.
Okay. So US,
yeah. Due to Treason Day, yeah, we no longer have an influence over you, unfortunately.
Oh, well.
So it's supposed to be a symbiotic relationship between all of the flag states that make up the Red Ensign Group. When I first started there, it was a little bit of a kind of a parent, naughty children relationship. That relationship over the years has absolutely matured into a very cohesive and unified approach and collaboration between all of the members.
Lovely.
So that's where you'll hear that kind of phrase, REG or Red Ensign Group. They're effectively all of the flags of the overseas territories and crown dependencies of the UK, and they make up this wider, what we call the Red Ensign Group.
Makes sense.
And then following that, so I was a UK base and then actually went to another flag state. I then bounced onto Cayman because I'd missed yachts.
Yep.
So ended up at Cayman Islands Shipping Registry, did a lot of new construction for them. And one of the main things that I did whilst I was there was develop their actual yacht code. So I moved us from what was the large yacht code number 3 or LY3. And we rewrote it into the Red Ensign Group yacht code. It's a bit of a rebrand there. Again, kind of speaking to that branding side of things.
I clearly remember back when I was involved in product development and special projects at Nautical Structures. And we were developing some of the very first Solus class approved cranes for the white boat industry. Yeah. There's a lot of commercial cranes you could buy, but they were steel junk. You didn't want to put them on a white boat like this.
Metal falls, oil on the teak decks.
All of that, you know. And so, you know, we worked through the whole process of getting Dyneema line approved for use in lifting appliances, which was unheard of up until our involvement. And I remember clearly working probably a little closer with Peter Southgate, but it was a collaboration very closely with Cayman Islands Shipping Register, where we co-interpreted the rules, LSA rules, and then came up with protocols for testing and standards that are still used today in the yachting industry by all manufacturers of this kind of equipment. Mm-hmm. So I do know that there is a role and there was a strong influence that flag brought to the table when it came to developing specialized equipment for yachts.
Well, the whole industry is so specialized that you know, we can't take, you know, a lot of what we have commercially and just throw it into a yacht kind of environment. So the whole regulatory structure is framed around the uniqueness of yachts. And that's how we end up with things like yacht codes. That's how we end up with these kind of bespoke pieces of equipment, like you're talking about. Cranes is such a fantastic example. And without that bespoke approach, we would be trying to fit yachts into either a cargo ship or a passenger ship kind of box.
Right.
They just don't really fit into
it. They don't fit very well.
You know, no. So the UK back in 1992, when the first yacht code was written, you know, understood this and wrote what we call an equivalence, which is a yacht code, which is equivalent to a set of IMO regulations or conventions. And it gives us the opportunity to actually design and build these incredible boats. So it was their foresight back in the early 90s that kind of put us on the trajectory that we're still riding at the moment.
Yes, that is really interesting. And I think that's something that's insightful. Most people take for granted how these boats kind of come about, you know, and they're beautiful. And you look at the naval architecture and you look at the styling and you see things that you don't recognize that you're actually seeing, the way doors and watertight closures integrate, the way, you know, wing stations are integrated. And you could go on and on and on. And on a commercial vessel, they're just clearly there. But on these vessels, they become one and part of the whole structure. And that adds to the grace and the beauty of the boats.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, each of those things that you mentioned there and, you know, the way in which these boats come together are so unique that every time we have a project, you know, it's yes, we get series boats and production boats and semi-production and everything in between. But that first one is always taken, you know, from a blank canvas. And the way in which we have to apply the rules to them takes a collaboration. So you're talking about collaboration there from an equipment manufacturer back when you were with Nautical Structures. You know, we have that from Flag State's perspective, kind of all the way through the process, trying to engage with the shipyards, with the manufacturers of the, you know, all these pieces of equipment.
That's right.
Because everything has to be kind of taken from a what was either originally designed for commercial and tweaked to become yacht specific, or just from the ground up designed and engineered for a, for the yacht needs.
Yep. And talk about yacht needs. It's clear that a lot of people don't understand that not all yachts are built the same, and they have different purposes. And so you have what we call in our industry commercial vessels, and we've got essentially private use vessels. We're on a commercial vessel. This boat is a charter vessel, and it's actively in charter service. It's not the same as when you have a boat that's built for an end user client and he's only going to use it for his family and friends. Mm-hmm. He's not going to charter it. It's for his personal use. Completely different ways of doing things between those two. I thought it'd be good to hear you kind of speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, they are. Their use modes are completely different. And due to the type of registration, whether you choose it to be effectively a commercial entity or whether you are going to use it purely privately, most flag states will give you the opportunity to register them differently as well. So a private yacht or a commercial yacht, there's some variance and nuances in the way that the different flag states call that. But if we stick with private yachts and commercial yachts, if it's a commercial yacht, then it needs to be compliant with all of the relevant international conventions that come from the IMO, which is the International Maritime Organization. Yep. It needs to be compliant with the relevant conventions of, you know, of the organization. We can tweak those and they can be these equivalences. So we've already mentioned the code. So elements of it can be designed and built to the yacht code, but it needs to effectively be compliant.
Okay? Right.
That's no different to if you've got a car or if you're going to carry more passengers, it needs to be compliant with a minibus. And if it's going to carry even more passengers, it needs to be compliant as a bus.
That's okay? Right. Yes.
So if you're going to take fee paying passengers, you have to meet a minimum set of standards. And the strange thing about the rules is if you're not going to be taking fee-paying passengers and you are going to choose to use the vessel completely privately, you don't need to comply with some of these regulations. Now, you do always need to comply with environmental regulations, which makes sense because however you're using it, you are still a boat. It's still full of fuel. It's still got oil.
Yeah, we don't want our blackwater tanks discharged into the beautiful ocean.
Exactly. Ruining the environment we're trying to enjoy on these boats.
Yes. Refrigerated garbage is recommended. You know, absolutely. You carry it with you and discharge it when you get to port.
Correct.
Right.
But there are safety and security standards that are not applicable if you choose to be purely private. Now, some owners see this as a cheaper way of running the boat or a different way of designing and building the boat. Personally, the regulations that actually apply to yachts are a minimum standard, and they can always be more from a commercial perspective.
Most people forget that. Same thing with the LSA code. That's minimum standard.
Yeah.
You got to at least achieve this, and there's nothing wrong with exceeding that
absolutely.
Standard when
now,
you can.
Exceeding it, there's going to be a cost implication and potentially during build a time implication. There could be space implications. There may be many reasons why someone wouldn't want to exceed them. But I do believe that when we're building a boat of, let's say, this size, we've got a 59-meter vessel we're on here. You know, if you're building a boat of this size, for the number of guests you're going to have, you're going to have 12 guests on board. You've got, you know, a significant number of crew on board serving them. You know, you should be hitting that minimum.
I agree.
Design and construction standard. Now, some owners will choose to say, I'm only ever going to use this boat privately. I want to therefore do something really unique that's outside of the regulations. Well, the regulations will stop me doing it because they're too blinkered in their application.
Yep.
And I can kind of buy into that argument. I think that's a way, but if you did engage with your flag state and your classification society and your shipyard, and your naval architect and all the relevant parties, you could still find ways of doing that in a compliant way.
Right.
And the biggest problem we have with this is if you choose to build a boat or operate a boat that's not in compliance with the regulations, the people that fall through the cracks are the crew. Okay. Now, on a private vessel, if you choose not to comply with all of these requirements, that's all very well you putting, you know, if you want to drive around in a car without a seatbelt or that's not being maintained or whatever it is, that's fine. That's you.
It's on you.
That's right. On you. But when you put to sea, you know, or put, you know, go to cross an ocean on a private vessel, you're putting, you know, your paid employees.
That's right.
At a certain level of risk that I don't think often actually even in the industry often even understands.
Unless you're a seafarer and have been to sea.
Yeah.
And then you really do understand how quickly that ocean can change on you. What kind of risks are around you at all times. You can be lulled into complacency so easily.
Yeah. And yet there's
so many ways things can go wrong on the ocean. And it's just something that, you know, crew accept this as part of the job description, but they expect that they're working under certain standards.
I think they expect there to be a minimum standard
that's
actually often not there. So, you know, when you accept a job on board a boat, you know, how many crew members say, you know, oh, is it charter or is it private? Because I want to know about tips and rotation and my workload.
Mm-hmm.
How many go, if it's private, is it under voluntary compliance with all the safety certificates? Is the life raft going to be serviced?
Right.
Am I going to have a seafarer's employment agreement that's compliant with the Maritime Labour Convention? Or am I just going to have something, you know, dropped it down on the back of a napkin? You know?
Right, right.
And especially green crew coming in, they just see, oh, we're going to pay you this much to be on this boat.
Right.
Without really understanding the environment that they're going to be stepping onto.
Right. Now, is this an area where professional yacht management comes in and helps and supports the crew?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a professional yacht manager that would be involved is kind of from both sides. Both they'd be advising the owner about what's appropriate, what's going to be safe, what's going to maintain the asset value the best. They're also going to be employing the best and the correct crew and informing those crew. So, you know, full yacht management that, you know, covers off all bases, essentially.
Yeah.
They'll be dealing with both the owner's side and advising them, but also advising the crew and then trying to kind of help them understand what they're getting into. But they're not working for the crew. You know, that's
no,
the thing. So they'll be working for the owner, maintaining the high level of standards. So if you know that your boat's being managed by a reputable yacht manager, that's a massive green flag for a young crew member to know, well, at least if it's going to be managed by this company, are going to be safer,
right,
and we're going to be better looked after.
Interesting you say that, because later this week, Graham Lord and I are sitting down. We're going to talk about his new business. And I think what he's bringing out in crew placement, crew management, is it's going to be the trend for the industry going forward.
Mm-hmm.
I predict that. And I think when people listen to what he and I have to say later this week, it's going to make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost certainly going to be game changing.
I agree. When someone's advocating for the crew, rather than just being effectively an employment mechanism, that's the difference,
yep.
And that's where, you know, people like Greg can really have this potential to change the industry.
Well, when I was running JMS Yachting, I built that yacht management company over here for the group over in Monaco, and we had a great time building a nice fleet in my tenure with the company, and working with the owners was probably one of the most common complaints and asks that they had. They wanted their crew happy. They wanted their crew retained. They lamented any crew turnover. They didn't want to see that. They really wanted longevity with the crew on board.
Mm-hmm.
We were given most of our owners gave us quite a bit of latitude for managing the crew and helping with that. But I think there is still room to go. You know, I talk about compassionate crew management, and I think it's really important that whether it's a management company, a captain, whoever's involved with the vessel, working with crew, understand that there's a culture that you want to develop. You want to build a team that is somewhat exceptional. Graham and I were talking just the other day, and he said, you know, Rick, you can take a very high standard yacht, and if you have a mediocre crew, you're going to have a bad experience. You can take a pretty mediocre boat, put a high standard crew on board, and you can have a great experience.
Yeah.
And so that's the conversation that often needs to come into play here.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And yacht managers, you know, yacht management is such a broad term. So when I left, and after having written the Rensselaer Group Yacht Code, I then moved into yacht management. So
yeah,
I had
with Dooley, right?
That's right, with Dooley Yachts. So
Dooley,
I had five
and
a half years. Yes, the hardest yacht management company name to to pronounce. You have to say it with a German accent for it to come out right.
Yes.
So I worked for them for 5.5 years. So I got some experience in yacht management. And the thing that a lot of people do in yacht management is, well, firstly, it's this hugely all-encompassing term. You know, some people will say, I'm a yacht manager or I'm in yacht management, and they do the financial administration. And you have other people who say, I'm a yacht manager and I look after boats, and they'll be doing safety and compliance, so ISM and ISPS. It could be technical. You know, you've got all these silos.
Or in this part of the world, I as a yacht manager, and I make sure the bottom of your boat's clean.
Absolutely. So the terminology is also, from jurisdiction to jurisdiction also changes. And that's interesting you mentioned that, because, in the US, the perception of, my yacht guy, like, once I've said you're looking after my boat, I expect you, that's
top
it.
To bottom.
That's everything.
Encompassing, right.
Yeah, whereas in Europe, they definitely are much more on the kind of professional services, much less on concierge, and much less on anything that falls outside of this kind of all-inclusive box.
That's right.
So these different jurisdictions treat the term differently, and then you have the different silos. So yacht management's the most dangerous term to throw around, because, before someone even starts a conversation of saying, what do you mean by that? Yeah. And I used to have this a lot. People say, can you give me a quote for yacht management? Yes, but what do you think that means?
Well, you just touched on two things which are interesting, because those that know. And Captain Herb Magny and I have started a company earlier this year called Trinity Maritime Services. We intentionally didn't use the word yacht management in the name of our company. And what we're developing right now is a concierge level management services directed to owners with a compassionate crew management piece, where I know we'll be collaborating with Graham. And, there's a need for this kind of thing. And that's kind of the takeaway. And when you see where this industry is going and you're tying in all of these moving parts and crew, I think the reason we even call it Trinity is I say there's three fundamental sacred elements of a successful industry. You've got the owner, you've got the crew, and you've got the asset. Those three things, you take out any one of those three legs, it doesn't work. And so, and that's, I think, where we come into your role. You've been in yacht management. We've been with Cayman. Now you're with Marshall Islands Shipping Registry. And you have an insight and a view that very few people in the industry have, because you've seen from the owner's perspective. You've been in the wheelhouse with the captains. You've been in the crew mess with the crew. You will understand more than most people how this really works and how these programs can come together for a real successful program, or how they can fall apart real quick.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting the way that you kind of, I like your three little, your holy trinity there.
Yes.
Because when it comes to the assets, within that, as we talked about, that kind of on this side of the pond, that American model, that asset is, that's then the all-encompassing kind of element of that.
That's true.
Whereas in Europe, all the more traditional yacht managers, they focus on silos of services. So I'm going to do technical for you, or I'm going to do your refit for you, and it's very much like, this is your scope of supply, and then you're kind of on your way if it falls out of that.
That's the business model I came from.
And I think there is a place for that. There are some owners
phenomenally successful, done right.
And, it does depend on the owner. And that's why I think this side of the pond are much more receptive to that all-encompassing thing or approach. Because in Europe, there are those who will say, well, hang on a minute, my family office is going to deal with this for me because they're going to do the employment, or they're going to do this, or I want someone else looking after technical. But you will always get the best holistic approach if you've got one organization looking after everything, rather than saying, well, actually, the ex-chief engineer is going to look after the refit for us, and the finance is done by this company. There's always going to be a breakdown in some level between
Guaranteed.
So, I think in an ideal world, having it all together, but getting some owners to understand that, and that's,
that's good communication.
But managing their expectations as well about what they're buying into, and sometimes they won't see the value straight away.
And we recognize that. So in our approach, we're actually working with just a couple very select owners who have been in the game long enough. They understand the value, and it has to start there. And then hopefully, just like Graham's business, which is, I think it's going to catch the attention of the industry and it's going to change how things are done, we're hoping that our model starts getting people thinking about how boats can be managed. And then, you turn a big ship, you want to go a different direction, it takes a while. You initiate your turn, and it's a couple nautical miles before you get there. So that's kind of where we are right now. It's like we know where we want to go. We've turned the helm in that direction, and now we just need to start going.
But it's getting the owners to understand that journey. And that's in my experience, have been some of the problems when you've got especially a new owner or an owner who's just worked within a certain model for a long time, mm-hmm. having them understand that things can be, well, if they come from an existing structure, that it can be done differently and better. And if they're new to it, getting them to understand where the value is. Because, you know, it's already, you know, it becomes very expensive very quickly. And it's not in a broker's interest often to tell them quite how expensive this journey is going to be. Okay, so they suddenly realize they've bought a boat that's maybe 25% bigger than they should have done from a budgetary perspective. Mm-hmm. And then someone's coming in and going, trust me, every penny you spend on management is going to reap benefits. But you got to, it's got to be upfront costs, because these, you know, if we manage the technical correctly, if we manage the crew correctly, you know, if we manage all of these different elements, it's going to save you money, but you've got to pay for the services to save you money.
You do. I used to basically say, listen, you'd pay for, on a large yacht like this, you'd pay essentially the equivalent salary of a head of department for your monthly management services, mm-hmm. but you then get a whole team.
Yeah.
And
that's a nice way of looking at it.
And there is real value in that, say, 13th crew member mm-hmm. that covers so many bases and is looking out for the best interest of the owner. Because again, the owner it all starts with he or she. You know, nothing happens without the owner's buy-in, the owner's participation, mm-hmm. and then captain and crew, and those all really should come together and work very cohesively.
Yeah.
You know, at a high level, which brings me to another experience and question I've got, and that is Flag. You guys have the opportunity of supporting crew when there's things going wrong. How does that work?
So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, within the MLC, the Maritime Labour Convention, there are actually clear lines of kind of that a crew member can take for complaints and procedures that go up through your management company to your DPA, which is the effectively the head of your management company, your designated person ashore. It's a kind of a established
Point of contact
within the ISM code, which is an IMO code. And then onwards and beyond through those to your flag state. So we have designated people who are there to effectively provide support to the crew when they come up through this kind of Maritime Labour Convention complaints route. We would also try and support crew when they have issues, when they are not on an MLC compliant boat. However, at that point, it becomes very difficult because we're not there to act as arbitrators in a contract dispute. So if they're saying, I've got a contract, it's not an MLC contract, but I've got a seafarer's agreement or seafarer's contract, different people call them differently, but not an SEA, not a MLC approved document, because it's not an MLC boat. And they say, I've not been paid out my leave. Now, that's not a flag state issue. That is mm-hmm. a contractual
issue
with the owner that you need to go through your go through your union, or you need to seek legal advice for. We can maybe, you know, kind of give you a little bit of guidance, but we're not there to provide arbitration for contractual disputes. What we are there to do is provide support for the seafarers when it's a MLC compliant boat and they have not been compliant with the MLC, which is different to contractual disputes.
It gets complicated, but I think what you have essentially said, distill it down to its most basic. If you have the opportunity to join a boat, you want to look for these types of things. Are you an MLC compliant boat? What flag are you going to be working under or associated with? Mm-hmm. You know, what are your protections? A lot of crew come into the space and they're taken advantage of because they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
And so people listening to this conversation hopefully can take away a little bit of do some homework. And, you know, it gets a little complicated. I've been in the game a very long time, and sometimes I still kind of get confused between, you know, different aspects of flag and what works and what doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But I think if you're going to take a position on the boat, it's really important that you understand who you're working for.
Absolutely.
And under what terms you're working.
Yeah, and that goes back to what we said before about, you know, that maybe even the vessel hasn't got safety equipment that's required to be kept up to date. And I think there should be more information pushed to these junior crew to let them know that, you know, not every boat is the same. As you started this conversation, you know, a charter boat is different to a private boat. Okay, now, what does that then mean? Well, a private boat may not give you a watertight contract, okay? And it may not then be, you may not get support from your flag state.
That's right.
You may not get repatriation.
Right.
And it's having them kind of understand that. What does it mean to work on a quality flag vessel opposed to someone who's not experienced in yachting? So all of these things are, yeah, it's a complex environment, and I can understand that. So anything we can do to push out that kind of that knowledge and that information, right, or even just ask the questions, talk to the management company, talk to the captain, ask some kind of pointed questions.
Yep.
Just think, oh, it's amazing, I've been offered a job on a yacht, finally, I'm off, I'll say yes to anything.
So this is where the value of professionalism really plays a part in our industry, really does. So, Joe, we are about to pull into the Fort Lauderdale International Boat Show, FLIBS, it's affectionately known. Looking out the windows here, and we see Hall of Fame Marina coming up there on our starboard side, and in a few minutes we're going to be docked, and dynamic week's going to start.
Big week.
Where we're going to find you in the USSA Sky Lounge?
Yeah, that's right. So one of the members of the Sky Lounge is going to be the Marshall Islands this week. So Bravo. We'll be there with half a dozen other companies. So we invite any of our friends, colleagues, clients to come along and say hi. But we've also got people all over the show going to the various conferences. I think tomorrow we're at Mary Forum. We're at the USSA Ask the Flag session, which is a really unique session for those who haven't heard of it, where a group of different flags all get together and talk about related issues. And it's not about so much about competition, but how are we all addressing differently?
That's going to be a fascinating conversation.
You know, the same issues.
What time and where is that going to be?
So that is going to be also in the Bahama tomorrow afternoon.
Tomorrow afternoon?
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. And will you be at the ISS gala tomorrow evening?
Unfortunately, I'm not, but a couple of my much more glamorous colleagues are going to be there. So.
All right. I look forward to seeing Iona then.
Yeah.
Not the personnel there, brother. I've seen your socks.
Yeah, they don't fly at the ISS. Yeah.
No, that's good stuff. Well, this is going to be a great week. I hope you'll join us on Friday when we have our Business of Yachting seminar on board this boat.
Absolutely.
That's going to be an amazing conversation. The panelists we've got are dynamic. The conversations are going to be insightful. And I'm going to be on board unbridled all week doing more of these interviews and being accessible and available to those who want to come in and talk to Yachting USA. This is a fantastic start to the week, and you are the guy that's starting it off for me.
Well, thank you for the invite, and I hope the rest of your interviews go well. And I'll definitely be there on Friday for the for your Business of Yachting session, and I'll ask some pointed questions to your panelists.
I'll make sure that you don't get the microphone.
Thank you so much.
This has been a real pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have a great week.
You too.
All right. And everybody, again, until the next time, I'm out of here.